Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Have you still got no windows?
No, oh my gosh, don't. And it's been the worst weekend to have no windows.
Right.
Because basically, it's so windy and so rainy. I can't go to bed. Like, so if James is out in the evening, I literally sit there like phoning him like, are you sure the windows like literally or these boards will not fall in? Like, are you sure that's not going to happen? I cannot like relax. I really can't. Just all these silly things you think, don't know.
No, of
course. Just get done. But actually, this is so annoying to not have proper windows.
Like, generally, I am the most freaked out person to live with anyway. Like, if I hear a noise in the night, I'll like sit,
yeah.
I'll upright and I'll be like, what was that? And Dozzle will be like,
yeah,
I don't know. I was asleep. And then,
so can you imagine just having boards up at your window, like knowing that anybody could just push it over?
I mean, yes, I wouldn't be able to stay in the house. And I don't know if you find this with the kids, right? But my worst fear in life is like little girl ghosts.
I'm not sure. What about little boy ghosts? Are they all right?
I just feel like they'd be a bit cheekier and less like terrifying. But like little girl ghosts from like horror movies, right? And then, of course, you have children. They come wandering in the dark and they stand next to your bed and just stare at you when you're asleep. And it's like, oh my God, it's like a Stephen King novel. It's so terrifying. That's happening a lot.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. Actually, so I haven't even asked you how Luna's getting on at school. How is she getting on at school? So how many weeks has she done now?
Oh, she's doing really well. I'm actually really proud of her. I think she's probably in her, I want to say like third week.
Yeah.
And just completely taking it in her stride. I'm so, I'm really, really, really proud of all she's, like all the things that she's doing because, you know, haven't really had very much kind of upset. Obviously, she's been a bit emotional, but that's kind of to be expected. And she's absolutely shattered.
But
they just like tiredness is like another level, isn't it? But yeah, she's loving it. And her little school is absolutely gorgeous. Really nice parents, amazing teaching. I love it. We're like, she's really settled. Kit, on the other hand, we've obviously moved him.
Yeah.
Moved him into a new preschool. So he started a new preschool. We had to leave that one because it was way too far away from Luna's and we couldn't get the school run to work. And now he's in another preschool and he's having a regression with his potty training, which I think is to do with the fact that he feels unsettled.
I was going to say, I think that's quite normal.
Is it?
When like any change happens. I mean, Gigi like fully just isn't doing any like anything on the potty or toilet at all anymore, and went from only wanting to do it on the toilet and potty to not at all. And that's, I think that was probably when she started preschool. So weird, isn't it?
Yeah. And like when we're picking him up, they're sort of saying, you know, he's had three accidents today. What's going on? And, you know, there is a level of understanding from them. It's just more like, I thought you said he was potty trained. And I was like, well, he was and he still is, but let's be really supportive and let's like kind of understand it a little bit more. So I did pop him back into nappies and then they said to me, look, we don't want him to go back into nappies. And I was like, okay, well, then we're just going to have to sort of bear with him and let's really support him and let's encourage him rather than saying like, oh no, you've done three accidents. It's like, okay, well, these things happen.
Yeah. All the positive, whatever
positive
it is,
language,
positive language.
The affirmations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally.
He's waking up also three or four times a night. So I think, bless him, I think he does feel quite up and down at
the
moment.
A bit unsettled. Yeah. And I think, do you know what? Speaking to some of the parents at Axel School, so many people are feeling like this at the moment.
Right.
I think it's maybe it just can't, maybe it's just part of like the new term. They're so tired. They're so overwhelmed. There's so much change. It, even if they've stayed at the same school, I reckon it's probably just something that happens, because it must be quite weird for them. Like, they've had 6 weeks or 7 weeks sort of not at school, and then suddenly they go back in 5 days a week. You would be, imagine if you'd had like 7 weeks off work, and then suddenly you wake up one morning and someone shoves you in the car and then chucks you back into work. You'd be a bit like, what?
Dude, if I was given 7 weeks off work, I would not be coming back. I would basically be moving to the Balearics and I'd be staying
there
forever.
That's what I mean. That's what I mean. That's how it is for them, isn't it? And they don't really have any warning. They're just like, whoa, okay. So I'm here now.
I did look at them on Friday morning and they had the blackest eyes in the world. Yeah. And we stayed in bed for an extra 20 minutes and they were like, I don't want to get out of bed today. And I was like, you poor little things, me neither.
Do you know what? I've got a confession.
No, go on. And
I know, I mean, some people listening will be horrified by
this. Oh God, I can't wait.
It just had to be done. So Axel and Gigi had their like sibling school photo. Like, we didn't do it last year, but this year we could get in early and like they could get a photo together. And because they had such because they had such black under their eyes, I put concealer on them.
Oh my God, you're joking. This is incredible.
No. And because James was like, oh my God, look at them. They look awful. And I was like, yeah, they do, don't they? And I was like, don't worry about that. I got a bit of concealer and some bronzer in my bag.
Oh, Georgia, I love your honesty. And I feel like hundreds and hundreds of parents around the country will be going, shit, I wish I'd done that. And that's absolutely fine. A little bit of concealer here and there. The Maybelline erase concealer.
Yeah, that's exactly used. Yeah. I used the Maybelline erase concealer and a bit of Chanel bronzer. So, you know.
Georgia. I'm dying. Last week worms, this week concealer.
No one wants that photo to come back where they literally look half dead.
Little girl like, ghosts. Yeah, we're back there again.
Exactly. They'll look like ghosts. Mine will be bronzed and glowing.
Anyway, I feel like this podcast might get shut down if you and I continue talking any longer. So let's get into today's chat. Wow, what a conversation. I'm still blown away by it, actually, by her honesty, aren't you?
Yeah.
Bravery.
But also, like very serious chat, but we had some real laughs. I mean, get kicked off if we're talking. Some of the conversations we were having with our guests were hilarious. We cannot wait for you to hear it.
We talked about a bit about homemade porn as well, didn't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Homemade porn sent via WhatsApp.
Oh my God. Not me and Georgia, by the way. Oh, I'm a bit giddy.
Well,
I'm giddy. Let's get into it. Who are we chatting to today?
Today we are chatting to the hilarious Helen Thorne.
Okay, I think it's safe to say I'd like to start this podcast by saying the last time I saw this person, she was in a Lycra leotard with Mother Pucker on it at a party and she was drunk. So we now know that we're going to like this person a lot. A comedian, author, slow runner, she's put, single mum, one half of comedy duo Scummy Mummies. So she's got a brand new book out, Get Divorced, Be Happy. Let's welcome Helen Thorne to the podcast.
Hooray!
You were very drunk when I saw you last.
I'm very good at being drunk, actually. It's one of my you know, core skills. One of my brand pillars, actually.
When they put on a form, what are you good at? Being drunk.
Very, very good. I'm a professional level drinker. I'm very very strong in the white wine area.
Highly skilled.
Yes, exactly right.
We just did a podcast. We just recorded with somebody who was saying that she's a dermatologist and she was saying she gets a lot of people coming to her complaining of white wine skin. And in my head, I was thinking, that's me. That's how I look in the mirror and go, oh, can I taste the Sauvignon Blanc?
Yeah, probably. Probably.
Well, what did you have last night, though?
No, I haven't. Actually, I'm just going to say this right now. I've only drunk 3 times in the last 4 weeks. Who am I?
That's very good. That's very good. I've drunk twice in the last 4 weeks just because of doing the marathon. Don't like to mention it. We mention it all the time.
So slow runner. Is that where that comes into it?
Yes, it does, because I'm a pretty hefty bird. I'm a stocky lady. I'm a big woman. So I don't run particularly fast, but I But it turns out I've got quite good stamina, and I'm quite strong. So I can run a marathon, but just not very fast. I'm not on the heels of Chipoge or Paula Redcliffe. But I enjoy it, and I like the solitude. I don't run with other people, and I rarely sort of run for speed. But I really like it. It's something weird, you know. I'm the classic kind of middle-aged white woman, middle class lady who's discovered exercise all of a sudden, just because, you know, I'm staring at the face of death. So I think it's been a revelation about how much I love running, even though I'm really built for it.
What possessed you to sign up for the marathon, though? Because let's be honest, going for like a little couple of miles or a K or whatever, but then actually taking on 27.2 miles, is it?
I think it's 26.2. Yeah, something
26.2,
like that.
26.2, so I'm just giving it an extra mile. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's a really stupid amount. And I did 20 miles on Sunday, and that's my last big one. I thought, Jesus Christ, this is a really long way, and I've still got another 6 miles to go. So we were approached by the lovely Bryony Gordon, who a couple of years ago said, do you want to run the marathon in your pants? And we're like, yeah, we love attention, why not? Little did we know that you know, there'd be a global pandemic, and that date kept getting pushed back and pushed back. So when it comes around Sunday week, 3rd of October, God, I'll be ready for it to be done, actually. But it's been, look, it's going to be emotional. It'll be a lot of, there'll be a lot of people out there cheering me on, and that's a really beautiful thing. So I feel very lucky.
Who are you running for?
For Women's Aid, who I adore. And they, if you don't know, listener, they support women in abusive domestic violence situations and support women and children. And I chose them a good couple of years ago. Before I became divorced, before I got myself out of a toxic relationship. So I sort of feel very passionate about this charity even more. But, they do incredible work. And also domestic abuse has sadly increased quite dramatically since the lockdown. So and services have dipped. So I think, you know, government support. So I think, you know, I'm really thrilled that I can support this charity. Yeah, that's it.
Are you doing it as the Scummy Mummies? Is it the pair of you?
Yes. So Ellie is supporting a brilliant charity called Born, which helps premature babies. And she had a preemie, Joe, who arrived 9 weeks early. So she's really passionate about that. But we do not run together. We do everything else together. But Ellie is a good half my size, and got legs that go up to her ears, so she runs like a gazelle. So she's the good thing is that she is getting to the pub first, and that is incredibly important to get the cold ciders in and the burgers ordered, so I can then kind of collapse. I think I'll be basically wheeled in on a stretcher and then just force fed a lot of carbohydrates, so that would be very nice.
If you don't do that thing approaching the finish line where you get somebody to help you across it, I'll be disappointed in you.
Yeah, you're dragging, you know, yourself across the finish line.
Yeah, yes. Sort of like a floppy sort of scarecrow, jelly. You know, that sort of, yeah, that kind of wow.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Seriously, yeah, exactly. Though, hats off to you for doing that. I do 5K and I think I couldn't do any, I can't possibly do any longer. That's it. That's like my, that's it. That's where I peak and that's where I fall and that's it. It's done.
5K is still a long way. 5K, I remember when I started off, like it would take me 50 minutes to run 5K.
Yeah.
And then 45 and then 40 and then I think the fastest I've done 5K is in about 33 minutes. And so.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you know, slowly. But, you know, I've got tits and a bum and, you know, slightly fearful that my fanny's going to fall out of itself. So, you know, I don't want to go too fast, you know.
No, but running's for everyone, isn't it? If, you know, if you can get out and do it. Well, you know, it doesn't matter how fast you go.
And the running community is just crazy supportive. Like I love the running nerds of the internet. They're a beautiful, beautiful bunch of people.
They really are. They're so into it as well. And like the running stories. I went on Jenny Faulkner's podcast and her Run Pod chat. And you know, I was just like, how are we gonna chat about running for an hour? And then somehow we were just telling each other stories of peeing in people's gardens on a run and, like, you know, coming across a random dog that we had to leg it really. Suddenly it was like, oh, I'm going really fast here. The dog's chasing
actually me. Yeah, what is your wee plan for the
Yes,
do you just wee?
No, I will go to, there are portaloos along the route. The other day I ran for 5 hours and I did one wee, and so I'm really not that worried about it, to be honest. There'll be portaloos at the start line, so more of a poo warrior, to be honest. Like, you know, I don't want to need to feel like I need to back one out while I'm running across London Bridge or, you know, Tower Bridge. But I, you know, the other morning, because the joy of doing a massive shit before you go for a run is you feel like you've won a prize. You really do. So I got up really early and had me porridge and had three coffees. I'm like, come on, body, back it out. I feel alive.
And then you know you're going to have a good run as well because everything's ticked off the list before the run. But the worst is getting caught short halfway round and then you're like, whose garden are we going to take a poo in?
No, you don't want any sphincter worries. You really don't. No. So that's the main concern. Yeah, so I'll have my big pasta the night before and then a porridge in the morning and then hopefully – and a banana often helps it slip out, you know.
Top tip for everyone.
Yeah, have a nani, you know, about 7 a.m. So that's good. Listen, ladies, I think the podcast is done. I think we've covered everything.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, Helen.
Thank you. Okay, yeah, great.
See you later, bye.
So you briefly mentioned that when you signed up to the marathon, you hadn't been through a divorce yet. So for anybody who doesn't know, rewind 18 months or however long ago it was that your relationship fell apart, and sort of just tell us how it happened and just a little bit about the story.
Yeah. So I was with my ex-husband since I was 19. And so, you know, I fell in love at university and we were together for that whole time until I was 41, so 22 years. And, it did feel like love at first sight, and we've had two children together, married, bought a house, live in London, all the things. And we just celebrated our 10-year wedding anniversary, gone away for a romantic weekend. We just run together, actually, the London Half Marathon on the 1st of March. And then on the 4th of March, I was getting together my daughter's World Book Day costume, and she changed her mind at the last minute. And I said, oh, I think Daddy's got a jacket you could wear. And I picked up the jacket, and inside the pocket was a love letter that revealed that my husband wasn't who I thought he was. And it was from a woman that I was aware of, which was devastating. And, you know, my whole world collapsed and exploded, and all the things, everything I knew, thought I knew about him, felt like a lie. And there were so many lies. And so he'd been having an affair for many years, which is incredibly devastating. So he came home and I told him it was over, and he stayed one night, and then that was the last night he spent in the house. And there was no point that I wanted him back. And it felt, it felt like my whole blood had run cold, that everything went into a spin, and I felt quite numb. I was in some fairly deep fucking shock. So it was horrific. And then 3 weeks later, the world collapsed and we went into lockdown. So it was in many ways a horrific way to deal with trauma when I was isolated for not only my family but my friends, and I couldn't be hugged by a friend for 3 months. And that's horrific. But in a way, it was one of those things that I had to face by myself. I couldn't get distracted by work or going to the pub or anything else. And sometimes that's a gift in terms of you have to hit the absolute rock bottom. You have to confront the sadness because there was no way to hide from it. I was living in the house that was full with all the memories and everything, you know.
It's like a death. It's like a death. 1 minute they're there, the next minute they're out.
Yeah, and you grieve very heavily for the marriage that was lost and the person that you loved. And also, I think one of the hardest things, and, you know, not to get really, really fucking sad, was a realisation I hadn't been loved properly. There was a realisation that I had poured my whole heart into this one person and he just didn't love me back. And that's a horrible feeling to give your kind, pure heart to someone who doesn't appreciate it, and all those, you know, romantic gestures over the years, and to give so much of yourself to someone who really doesn't, who then goes and smashes your heart, is a really hard thing. And we know all the stats about divorce. It's, you know, 42% of marriages end in divorce, and affairs happen all the time. But it's fucking awful, and it's not just you that gets hurt. It's obviously the children, but But it is like a tsunami of pain. And, you know, it's two people fucking behind people's backs, right? This is the thing. But it's full of lies and it destroys, you know, it hurts communities, it hurts people around you who love you. And I think this is the thing about affairs is that, you know, I'm sure they're thrilling. I'm sure the people doing them was like, oh wow, I get to, you know, have secret holidays and all that sort of stuff. But the ongoing hurt and also the damage that it does to people is enormous. Yeah. And that I will not shy away from, you know. I am the happiest I've ever been. Like, there's a happy ending, everyone. Don't worry. I'm really good. But I, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the book is that I wrote the book while I was still experiencing it. And the book is pretty, it's raw and honest. It's really, you know, there's lots of funny moments and also there's the big happy ending in which I'm, you know, basically want to run down the street going, I love being single, you know, and the happiness that I've found becoming a single woman is the happiness I thought I'd get from being married and supposedly being loved by a man.
When you look back on that period, because I imagine, I wouldn't like to put words in your mouth, but you've probably replayed all of those moments in your head a million times and gone, was there any indication that this was going on? Have you identified any sort of moments where you thought, actually, hang on a minute, that didn't feel right? Or because I guess that's all of our worst fears, right?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I even remember a month beforehand, there was a few parents who were getting separated in my daughter's class. And I hugged him really tightly in bed and said, I never want to get divorced. And he's like, yeah, me too. So I think there was a underlying fear there somewhere that I had to be reassured. Yeah, there were a couple of moments where I just thought he was slightly detached or a bit depressed, but he went through periods like that. Yeah. And so I just didn't think he had it in him. Like, I was really shocked because I just, yeah. And you know, obviously I found out lots more things about all the things they did together. And I thought, oh God, he never gave me that. Where were my romantic gestures? And that's very hurtful. That's really hurtful when I'm a wildly romantic person and all I've wanted in life, I realized before I was divorced, is to be fulfilled by romantic gestures and to have that tenderness. And I don't think that's unfair or unreasonable because, you know, love is beautiful when it happens. But I do feel like I was very much denied that experience. Even in my head, I was thinking, oh, this is okay. This is good enough. And I'll make the effort. I'll organize the dinners. I'll do that. But it'd be nice one day if someone did that for me. Ooh, but I'm sure, and I'm sure a lot of other people listening going through it, you know, once you get rid of a partner like that, then the whole world opens up and you rediscover and re-see your female friendships and the love that you have in all other forms. And love isn't just about romantic love. Love is about those deep connections you have with your girlfriends and your siblings or manner of people, actually. And I think that's been the absolute prize of being divorced, is that those relationships have really solidified. And also I've made new friends. I've made some amazing sort of single parent friends who I cannot imagine life without, and they're recent friends in the last 18 months. So I think there's so many great things to come of it. And I'm really fucking proud of myself and my children for this new kind of mighty family of three that we have. And, you know, even this morning when it was chaos and I've been up since 5:30, that, you know, I made my son hang out some clothes with me and all that sort of stuff, and everything's sort of down to me now. So I think that's good. I think it's a really good thing.
We'll be right back after this short break.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Can you just take us back to the moment that you found the letter? So you're trying to get a World Book Day costume together for your daughter and you find the letter. Was your daughter there when you saw, like, physically saw the letter? What did you do in that moment? Because when I sort of think about that, I think, gosh, are you trying to protect the children or can you just not do that in that moment? How did that first couple of days and that moment go?
Yeah, so she saw me pull the letter out and I quickly saw it and then I put it in my pocket and I just went into shock basically. And I did that sort of thing where you speak in a high-pitched voice. You go, it's okay, it's okay. And she said, what was that, Mummy? I said, it was nothing. And she said, that doesn't look like nothing. And she was right. It wasn't nothing. It was absolutely everything.
So how old is she, Helen? Sorry.
She was 11. Yeah. So she was in year six. So she's old enough, but, you know, to know when moods change and something's not quite up. But we managed to kind of get through the first couple of weeks without them sort of knowing about it. But after 2 weeks, I was like, I can't. He would come in, put the kids to bed, have dinner with us, and then he'd go and stay in a hotel. All the while I'm just like wanting to throw up in my mouth. But you do extraordinary things when you want to protect your children. And then I was like, I don't want any more lies in the house. I don't, you know, my life just felt it was full of lies. And memories just kept getting, you know, like flashes of memories going, oh, my God, he was texting her. Or what was that work conference? Was it really a work conference? Was he on holiday with her? Like all those sort of things. Like everything, his reality hasn't changed because he was living that. Nothing has changed in his world. But all the memories that I've had it's like someone went through it with a machete. And that's really fucking hard because it just sort of shakes you so dramatically going, what did that mean? What was that? And when, you know, and you know, to feel like nothing's kind of real, which it is, of course. You know, I have my amazing career and I have the brilliant Ellie in my life and friends and things like that. But that kind of, you know, trust is ultimately destroyed for a very long time. And you sort of second guess everything.
Yeah.
So I was in a lot of shock. But again, like I just there was no point. I don't think either of us wanted to save the marriage. It was like this kind of guillotine, like a really instant sort of like, no, it's done. Get out. Done. And I know that's not the same for everyone. People want to save it, and some people get through infidelity. But there was no way I was doing that. I thought, no, I don't know who you are. Like I can't spend any more time with you. So that was incredibly awful.
horrendous. And actually, I have experience with this, and I won't go into too much detail because it's not my story now to tell as a grown up, but as a child, I experienced infidelity in the family. Yeah. And I remember watching it did to, you know, the people involved who ended up staying together. And then me as a child in that environment and not knowing what was real and what wasn't real, and whether that person had told me the truth or whether they'd been lying to me constantly. And it really affects you long term. It's hard for it not to affect you long term, and a lot of work was done in my life to try and deal with or process what happened to me as a kid, you know, and what I saw and stuff. So I think, you know, the fact that you're being so open and honest with your kids and you sound like you're just doing everything right by them is absolutely admirable. Like, it's really incredible. Well, because it's them that's going to have to cope with it, you know, later on. And like, you also want to protect, well, here's a question for you. Do you want to protect your husband, their father?
Well, I mean, we've been very upfront, but they don't know lots of the details, but they know that there was another person involved, and that's why. Yeah, and we told them enough that they know. So they know he had an affair, and that's enough information for now. Yeah. And And but also that, you know, that they're very loved and I want them to have a really positive relationship. And they do have a really good relationship with their dad, and that's something that they have to work hard on. And you know, that's what I want to, and I never slag him off in front of the kids. And, you know, that's really, because that's part of their self-esteem is their relationship with their dad. But I spoke to a lot of friends, you know, our age, and they said the worst thing that their parents did when they separated was not tell them the truth. And lies are so much more painful than the truth. They really are. And, you know, and I think, you know, it's right to only tell them enough, because, you know, they don't need to hear the gory details. Nobody does. But just to understand why, because, you know, having, you know, in the book I interview the amazing Philippa Perry, who's a leading psychotherapist on this, these sort of matters. And she said, you know, if you don't tell them the truth, they will make up. They'll make something else up. And a lot of the time children will blame themselves. And I did not want the kids to blame themselves for this. This was nothing to do with them. So I think that's really good. And, you know, everyone's going to be different. And there'll be people listening to this who may disagree with what I'm saying or whatever. But you have to do what's best, because you know your children better than anybody else. And for us, and, you know, we made that decision as parents to tell them, you know, enough information, and I think that's it. But you know, it's going to be hard. But it's always going to be hard. If it's not hard now, it'll be twice, 10 times as hard when they're older.
Absolutely.
So it's sort of, you can't hide away from, like, pain is part of life. Sadness is part of life. You know.
Did they have questions? You know, like, I guess, did they have a lot of questions when you sat down and told them what was happening?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, children are curious, you know. I had a lot of questions as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, but you had about pages questions of them. Yeah.
What the fuck's going on here? Why was my life like this today and then tomorrow it's like that? Yeah, I do. And I don't want to, you know, reveal too much about that, just for their own privacy. But they were incredibly curious, and they still are. And again, in the book, there's a chapter all about this, about telling the children. And as Philippa Perry says, you don't just tell them once. It is an ongoing conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think if anyone's thinking about what it's going to be like, on the other hand, it's just about always being open, and I just always wanted to feel available to them. And that was the other brilliant thing about being in lockdown. I was their mummy, you know, 24/7, you know, hanging out in our PJs all day long, eating Haribo and having pizza for dinner. But I was there. And if they wanted to have a cry or they were just confused about stuff, then I felt really available. Because at the moment, you know, I go on tour a couple of nights a week and I'm busy, and, you know, as all parents are. But to actually have that time to sort of embed ourselves and grieve together was really beautiful, I think. So, yeah, I think I was lucky.
What's been the hardest part about being a single parent, and what has been the part that you didn't expect but has actually been, you know, wonderful growth and enjoyment for you?
I think the hardest part is, yeah, not having them all the time. That's hard. And again, on the flip side, that's the best part.
The lions.
It's really hard, and I miss them. And, you know, we split the school holidays down the middle. So there's times where I don't see them for a week or two, and that's really hard. Do you know what? It's the hardest bits are the bits I'm most proud of, and it is you know, both sides of the coin. Like last night, I was going, fuck, I've got to go away for 3 nights and sort everything out, and, you know, all the jobs are mine. You know, the kids try bits and bobs, but, you know, you have to go back and do half of the stuff they've done. But I think it's important that they do it anyway. But yeah, I think that's really hard. It was hard when my ex got another new partner, and the children spend time with her. That I found quite confronting, actually.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And yeah, and that's not easy. That's not easy. I really cried about that. I found that very hard.
Was that
because I was jealous?
Yes, I was just about to ask that. Sorry, Helen. Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it wasn't in any way else. But I'm protective of them, and I don't want them hurt. And, you know, I don't know how long this relationship will last or whatever. And obviously, this is life. You know, people have new partners, and maybe one day I will. But, you know, I think that's hard when it's out of your control. And yeah, so I think that's a very hard, yeah. And I do write about that in the book. I really found that incredibly upsetting. And I'm sure she's very nice and all that's a thing, but it still doesn't mean it, you don't sort of you get those feelings of wanting to be mother hen. Yeah.
And do the kids know you feel like that? Or do you keep that from them?
I keep that. Yeah, I want to be as strong and as positive for them as I possibly can, and just feel them with confidence. But also be realistic. If they want to feel angry, that's okay. If they want to feel sad, you know, because it's a really hard thing to kind of put your head around. And they were like, "Mummy, we don't mind the divorce. It's just that it's just going back and forth from two houses every week, and that is a fucking pain
in the
ass.
That's a lot.
And,
yeah,
and remembering." You know, flutes and trumpets and PE kits and having the right, you know, charge cord. I mean, God bless the charge cords. We need about 17 of them in this house. But, you know, all those sort of things. I think that's – but it's not impossible, and it's, you know, it is part of life that we just have to make the best of it. And I think that's what I want to sort of instill in them. Is that, you know, you're allowed to feel sorry for yourself a bit, you know, have those moments where you have a bit of a tantrum, but also – try and find the light. Just try and find the light in the darkness, because it is there to be found, and there are going to be hard days. But I love being a single mum. I adore it. I have them 5 days a week, and there's lots of different terminology. Some would say I'm a co-parent, but the terminology is if you have them more than half the time, you can call yourself a single mum. But other people will say, you know, all sorts of different phrases. But I quite like using the word single mum, because it's a term that has been stigmatized for many, many years. And I like using it, and I like being proud about it, and I like to say I'm a really happy single mum. And, you know, I don't want a head tilt. I don't want anything else. I just want to be accepted. And I like that I can use the platform that Ellie and I have built up in the last 8 years, it feels like 18, that there's visibility on this. And single parents have thanked me for talking about it. But also I think married couples get a window into a life that, you know, they may not ever be in.
But you might.
You might have a mate that's going through it, and you haven't really considered that.
Yeah.
And also I think it's nice to see, like you say, you're a happy single mum, and it almost takes away that fear, because there might be people, you know, like you say, they're trying to get past infidelity in a marriage, or they're in a toxic relationship, but the ultimate fear is being a single mum. And to see somebody out there, you know, who's, you know, going to say, yeah, it is hard, but look, I'm actually really happy now. Mm. That is great, you know, it's amazing. And it might have been something that we hadn't seen before, you know, before Instagram. You might only know your kind of community and like a couple of extra friends, but now it's just opened up, and you can see people going through all sorts of things. And I think it eliminates that fear surrounding it.
Yeah, and I think that's you know, something that I realize quite early on after saying that I've become a single parent is just how little positive stories we hear, how few, I should say. And then I thought, no, I need to, and I don't shy away from the hard stuff. No, I don't. But also it's the hard stuff that makes you feel almighty. You know, you know, getting through the list and trying to juggle it all is it's really extraordinary. And I know there are solo parents out there who get no breaks, and I feel very lucky. And I, you know, check my privilege all the time that I get to have 2 days off a week. But I think you can't represent everyone, and you can just represent your own authentic story, and people can take from my story as much or as little as what they want from it. So I think but it shouldn't stop you from wanting to share your story as well.
And when you're alone in those 2 days a week that you get off, and you're in bed and you're not writing your amazing new book, are you meditating, watching reruns of Nevermind the Buzzcocks, watching porn, any of those three, online dating,
or all of the above?
And all of the above, yeah.
I mean, yes, if I could do all three at once, wouldn't that be lovely? Goodness, it saved me some time. I try to do a variety of things, you know. I mean, it is nice occasionally, you know, when I get a good shag, that's lovely. That's a lovely thing. That's a wonder. I really like sex. Who knew, hey? I'm really into it. It's great. And I've had sex with a variety of people, and that's been wonderful as well. Just sort of discover, you know, dating younger men, older men, men from different countries, like all sorts of things. And
wow.
Yeah, it's been, it's
I'm
been
jealous.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I'm like, oh, what does that feel like again? Yeah.
I'm having a lovely time. Yeah. Yeah, but I don't do it all the time. And also in the beginning, I was like, oh, my God, give me all the cock. Just fill me up. And now I've calmed down a little bit, which is good because, you know.
Too much cock gets a bit boring.
Oh, it does. No one ever. It does. And there's a lot of admin in it. You know, you've got to connect with the people on the internet. And just, you know, going, oh, I'm only free on Friday nights. Oh, no, I've got a gig. Maybe Saturday night. Oh, I'll go to your house. Like, it's, you know, there's, and then there's the lists of things like, yeah, I like this and I don't like this. And then they'll be like, oh, I like anal and pulling hair. I'm like, oh, I'm really busy for the next forever. Bye.
That's amazing. And then if you don't fancy that, there's the world of pornography, which just when you're single and you're alone in bed, you're like, well, hang on a minute. Suddenly I wasn't ever that interested in this, but I'm alone now. Have you
no admin involved in that? No,
but although there is, when you've got like a server that won't let you log on to, like, I stopped watching it when I met my husband because I thought my porn addiction was becoming slightly intense. So I was like, I'm just gonna leave this alone. I'm in a loving relationship now. But then he went out the other night, which he never does, and I was like, oh, I'll just have a little look and see what's, you know, trending.
See what's been updated in the last few years.
Is it a 70s moustache? Yeah. I mean, what's going on?
Or a 70s bush. I'm completely blocked. I couldn't log on through my server. I couldn't tether my phone. And it was like, then I got porn frustration because then I realised I couldn't watch any porn in my house at all.
You've been blocked.
Literally cock blocked. Yeah. That's a shame. That's a shame when you want. Well, I've been lucky recently. A couple of blokes have sent me some videos that they've made themselves.
Oh my God!
I've gone back. You know, it may have been a one night stand or whatever, but they've sent some homemade little clips of things. Sometimes that's quite motivational. Especially when they say your name in there. Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Can you put in requests?
He made one for you, George, as well.
Yeah,
oh, Georgia.
Voiceover on top of it. And you could send one to Zoe with her name, and then you could send one to me with my name.
Yes.
Oh, that would be such a lovely gift for the world. Really, it would be. I do it via WhatsApp. It's lovely. Really nice. Really classy.
Moving on from homemade pornography, let's talk about the book.
Yes, please.
Talk to us about this amazing piece of
literature.
Some words on the page. Let's not over-egg it. So the book is called Get Divorced, Be Happy. And so it is an account of my first year after separation. So it goes from finding out, getting into the pits of despair, and then rediscovering just how fucking wonderful life can be on the other side. And it's very raw and it's very out there. But I interview over 40 different women who are experts in their field. So it really confronts anger, sadness, grief, telling the kids, but also there's some really good meaty advice about lawyers and, you know, being really upfront about money, which is something you know, and I don't mean this in a sexist way, but women haven't traditionally been very well informed about pensions and savings and knowing about money as well. So I wanted to be really upfront because I was told by my ex, you don't need to worry about pensions, you're going to be looked after forever. And I hadn't really thought about money or living by myself at all. And I'm really ashamed of that. So I wanted to kind of confront some of that. But it's not, you know, that's a small part of the book. Don't worry, listener. But I wanted it to be a little bit of a handbook for people going through what I went through. But also it's just a funny story. Like this shit in there that you couldn't make up, like me getting my wedding ring removed by five hot firemen at a fire station in Deal.
Amazing. You know,
yeah, exactly. Wow. But I would say the book is like a love letter to women and especially Ellie, and about how do you get through a period in your life where you weren't expecting it. So it's sort of a triumphant story. And the book is for everyone. Do you know why? Because I have had so many messages from married people and married couples who've read the book and said, actually, it gave me a good shake up about what marriage is. But also it is a feel good story, I would say, about, you know, even though life gives you a big bucket of shit, you can still get on with it. So, I've had the most beautiful response to the book. I'm really thrilled with how it's been going. And people have listened to it around the world, which is great. So, yeah.
Well, we are so excited for you. And we think what you've done is just remarkable. And the fact that you've been this honest and this brave to come out and actually shown us, you know, what it's really like to go through it. We thank you. So thank you so much for coming on. And we think you're an absolute superstar.
Thank you, Helen
Thorne. What a superstar.
Thanks so much,
darling. Thank you.
I love her. I will never be able to completely comprehend what she's been through. I think you and I really feel like that the horror of discovering that your life partner has been cheating on you. I mean, Jesus Christ.
I know.
Then for her to come out the other side and re-find herself and to be like, do you know what? I am having my happy ending now. Amazing.
Yeah. And I hope anyone who's sort of going through anything like that listens to this and sees that there is light at the end of the tunnel and that you can come through it. But I mean, wow, like unbelievable being thrown straight into lockdown as well. Like she really couldn't run away from what was going on. Yeah. She really just had to face what was happening head on. Mm. And maybe, you know, maybe that sped up the healing process. Who knows? Mm. But you know, whatever she did, it's worked, and she seems, well, she seems pretty happy, and you know, she's got a new lease of life. So it's really lovely to hear that.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you to Helen for coming on and being such an incredible guest, and thank you for your suggestions. Do keep them coming in. As always, we would love you to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast, and give us a little follow as well. That would be great.
Yeah, please do. And if you have got any more suggestions or there's any guests you'd like to hear from, then please just drop us a DM. We're on at Made by Mamas or on Zoe's own channel at Zoe Hardman, and we'll be back on Friday.
Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.